Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by Justin Peach's predictions to my predictions. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Oh, Justin, another huge weekend in the Championship. Not only is it a huge weekend because of everything that has happened in the Championship, Justin, but it's also my dog's birthday today. His first birthday, in fact.
Yeah, it is. Happy birthday, Derek Dezza.
Derek, yes. Derek, named after former Sheffield United defender Derek Geary.
Is he really? Is he really?
Of course he's not.
He absolutely is, because my dog's named after Kasper Ankergren, and we all know that's to be a fact. Obscure football is the game here, is the actual game.
Of course. This is very on brand for us, naming them after very obscure former Championship players. You know, that's what we're all about here. Anyway, Justin, welcome to the Number One Championship Podcast, the Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are listening to us today. As we say, another cracking weekend of Championship action with so much being turned on its head once again. And you know what? Since the Championship has been turned on its head this weekend, we're going to turn things on their head this weekend in this episode, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to start off by talking about the relegation battle after one result in particular, which I think it's fair to say is shaken up everything down at the bottom. So we'll talk about that, then we'll talk about the promotion race, and then we'll finish off with the polls and Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight at the end of the show. So, as I say, one result in particular has really caught the eye. It's Sheffield Wednesday, who are out of the bottom three for the first time since August. Saturday got a massive 3-1 win at Blackburn. I mean, where do we start with this game, Justine? Because there was so much to take in here, but I've got to say, the limbs for the second goal, which put Sheffield Wednesday ahead for Marvin Johnson, they were incredible, weren't they?
They were, and that's, I think that's just a sense of relief, I think, because this was a really tight game, a really, really tight game up until Marvin Johnson put that goal away, because it was a stop-start game as well. It didn't really get into a flow. It was a typical sort of Sunday midday kickoff towards the end of the season. There's a lot riding on it, a lot of nerves, and as I say, that Johnson goal going in, that relief from the Wednesday fans was just extraordinary, and that outpouring of relief was there to be seen in the limbs. Incredible.
Yeah, and up until that point, it was quite an even game, and it looked like really that a point was going to be the most likely result, and that probably wouldn't be good enough for Wednesday, hence why the relief was so palpable at that very moment. I mean, we've got to take a brief moment just and talk about that Josh Windass goal, because that was sublime, wasn't it?
It was beautiful technique as well. I think when you're able to sort of cushion it on a half volley and almost not slice it, but you get the sort of contact that you intentionally slice it, but it's not a slice, if that makes sense. You cut through it and it curls away. It was beautiful, and you know, you had to think quickly as well, old Windass, and it's not a surprise given his dad did exactly the same thing, thinking quick on the football pitch.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, Josh Winters has made a career of doing that himself. That's not to.
Well, he's made a career of coming up in the big moments, hasn't he, Justin? Yes, and not only was that a massive goal for Sheffield Wednesday, it was just a beautiful goal. And I tell you what, goal of the season contender? Is it that good?
Well, I mean, in terms of the magnitude of it, and the narrative and the way he's put it in, I think you've got to give him some dues, maybe a top five contender, but it's not going to be goal of the season, is it? Because there have been much better goals than that this season, but certainly worth throwing it into a top five. Absolutely.
I think it's in the conversation, but considering we've had Wes Burns's wonder goal, that's just not going to be topped by anything unless it's absolutely sublime. But that was an unbelievable goal from him, and such an important goal as well, as we say. So that's one moment of extreme high quality, Justin. Mm-hmm. Let's go to one moment of the complete opposite, which was utter toilet. Ainsley Pearce's mistake for the third goal. Proper own goals and gaffes stuff. I think that's fair to say, but I found it very funny, Justin.
Yeah, an all-timer cock-up. And you sort of, you look at the football, you look at the pitch, don't you, when the ball bobs over his foot, and you're thinking, surely it's hit something, because the commentators were suggesting it hit a bottle. But it didn't really hit anything, and then it created a load of backspin. And you do feel for him in that scenario, because it's not his fault. Those things happen on any single football, on any football pitch in across the world. Mm. It can be a terrible pitch, or it can be the nicest of pitches. That can happen if there's a slight divot. And it's just a case of how's your look. And considering there was a bit of a cock up for the first goal that he didn't put into Rosehead, the, you know, Josh Windass being able to put it into basically an open goal from 30, 40 yards. You know, it's one of those days where it's okay, how should it look? And it just make me ask the question as well, where would Blackburn be if it wasn't for goalkeeping errors this season? They'd have won the championship. They've won the British Championship.
I'm not sure I'd go that far, but they have had a bit of a poor season in terms of their goalkeepers. But honestly, there aren't many things in football that make me genuinely burst out loud laughing while I'm on my own in the living room watching the game. Yeah. This was one of those moments. It was so funny. And I also enjoyed the kind of comical run back from him to try and, you know, catch up with it.
Desperation.
Well, the desperation, because it bounced after he turned around to try and chase it. But because he was so worried about toe poking it or like stumbling over the ball into the goal, he moved out of the way. And then it went to the goal anyway, because it had so much topspin on it. It was such a funny moment. And it's one which I'm going to fondly look back on over the years. I can tell you that much for sure. But Justin, honestly, the magnitude of this result is huge, isn't it? As I said at the top, Sheffield Wednesday have been in the relegation zone all season apart from the first game week. That is how big this result is. And it's really thrown the cat amongst the pigeons, hasn't it? Because before this game, you'd probably looked at it and thought, well, Wednesday, if they draw or lose, then that means the likes of Stoke, QPR, probably Blackburn, possibly Plymouth as well, they're all but fine, really. Now you're looking at it and going, wow, it's still pretty open, pretty much open, isn't it?
It is, and it obviously changes the magnitude of Birmingham's result against Rotherham, which we'll get onto at some point. But yeah, them winning just changes things, and to be out of the bottom three, it's good timing, really. It's good timing. You know, if you're going to get out of the bottom three, make sure it's towards the end of the season. But I think in the way they won the game away from home at Blackburn against a relegation rival, it's a significant sort of almost a call to arms to themselves, isn't it? That they can do this. They are capable. They are now in a position where they've got the likes of QPR and Stoke within arm's reach. They're just 3 points off them. Not suggesting those teams will get pulled into the bottom three battle, but Wednesday are now looking behind them as opposed to looking above them, because they're in that position and they've afforded that position themselves by being so consistent under Danny Rule. So, yeah, an incredible time to do it. And I say it just completely changes the complexion of this relegation battle, because it says, all the results yesterday, they turn on their heads.
Yeah, it really, really does. And again, we will always give massive praise to Danny Rule. Even if Wednesday go down, he deserves so much praise for getting them to the position where they have come close to staying up. But for them to actually be outside of the bottom three now is honestly one of the most ridiculous achievements we've ever seen at championship level. So whether he can pull it off and actually keep them up, we'll have to wait and see. He's a bit unfortunate that he has done this job in the same season as Kieran McKenna and Ipswich, because otherwise he'd probably be running away with manager of the season. But still, a pretty astonishing achievement. But you look at it now, they are well in their rights of staying up, because they've only lost one of their last six games. They've got West Brom at home coming up next, and then Sunderland away. Sunderland are not in great sticks right now, are they? So it's a really, really promising period for Sheffield Wednesday, because at one moment, last week, it looked like they were pretty much dead and buried. But now there's a genuinely good chance that they stay up, and that's pretty remarkable. I will say, I thought Blackburn were pretty much safe heading into this game, but now I'm not too sure, Justin, looking at the table. It's it looks like relegation's kind of crept up on them again, but I thought they were just about fine.
Yeah, when you think they're safe, it pulls them back in, which is a movie quote somewhere. I can't quite remember the film, but it's incredible, really, isn't it? It's incredible. That's just the up and down nature of this relegation battle. There are so many teams that have been in it for so long, they've pulled themselves away. I mean, QPR, up until this weekend, looked like they were being dragged back into the bottom three, but they pulled a really good result out against Preston. The likes of Stoke as well were tripping over themselves, but they convincingly beat Plymouth, etc. Things have changed so quickly and so almost violently, results-wise and form-wise, that you pull yourself away and you get pulled back in again. So let's not count our pigeons just yet with the likes of Stoke, pigeons. QPR. Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Chickens, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, so that's not cat or pigeons just yet. with these teams that are just sort of hovering ever so slightly and curiously above the bottom three, because yeah, it can change so quickly.
Well, that result had a massive, massive say on one team in particular who are currently occupying the bottom three, and that's Huddersfield Town, Justin. They lost 4-0 at home to Swansea on Saturday. Bloody hell, this went downhill quickly, didn't it? It was 0-0 in the 72nd minute, and then they ended up losing 4-0. And look, this was a massive game for Huddersfield Town in terms of their survival, and they've been beaten up 4-0 at home by a pretty unconvincing Swansea City. And now that we've got the context of the Sheffield Wednesday result, it makes it look even worse. But, I mean, this game was a bit of a shambles, Justin, from a Huddersfield perspective, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It really was to manage a game like that. I mean, they've had issues with game management for the entire season. They drop goals late in games very, very often, but to drop four and completely lose your asses, like, let's not beat around the bush. Huddersfield completely lost their battle in this game, and it's that mental capacity that they just haven't had all season. Did they have it last season? Okay, maybe. Well, yeah, they did under Neil Warnock, and they were in a decent position at the start of the season under Neil Warnock as well. They weren't being rolled over, were they? But, you know, since Brighton Wright came in, it's not been great. It's not been great. I feel like there's been a ripple effect from almost Carlos Corbran leaving when he did. And it just feels like the club is still reeling from it, because it just feels like they're not mentally recovered from that period. They've had six managers in two seasons. That's including John Worthington. Obviously, Brighton Wright is the sixth. And it's just a mishmash of recruitment that's led to this. And as I say, the team looked mentally done. As soon as Swansea scored, they dropped off, and it was, yeah, as you rightly put it so eloquently, it was a shambles.
Yeah, a pretty shameful showing, really, because this was a massive opportunity for them and they've blown it. But it pretty much sums up the appointment of Andre Brighton Wright since he's come in. A steady start, but now actually seems to be taking them backwards. It's one win in 10 now. And unfortunately, if you're looking for signs of encouragement from a Huddersfield Town perspective, they are fading. They've scored 6 goals in 9 games as well. And, you know, when Brighton Wright came in, he had a reputation as someone with a great record of making the most of the tools that he's got available to them. So he looked like a pretty good appointment when he came in. But we haven't seen that at all. I mean, serious question, would they have been better off if they kept Darren Moore in charge? I think they would have, because he was just getting a bit of momentum when Huddersfield sacked him, which is why I said it was ridiculous when they got rid of him. Mm-hmm. I got quite a bit of blowback from Huddersfield fans after I said that, but I've hardly been proven wrong since then, have I? So I'll reiterate the point. They may as well have kept Darren Moore, because Andre Brighton Wright is looking less and less like he was the right answer. And that's why Huddersfield are now well and truly staring down the barrel, aren't they? I mean, this result was bad anyway, but now with Sheffield Wednesday winning, it's really, really bad. And it's very interesting to see what their game is next week. Huddersfield v Birmingham. It's 22nd v 23rd, so it doesn't get much bigger than that, really, does it? But, Justin, if Huddersfield lose, they will be officially relegated. But even then, a draw isn't really ideal, because it would mean all sorts. And keep in mind, Huddersfield have got to beat Ipswich on the final day. So Huddersfield v Birmingham, it's essentially a reverse playoff final, isn't it, Justin?
In the Bundesliga, they have the relegation. They have the for relegation and promotion from the top division to second division. They have the second division playing the team in the top division. It almost feels like that. This is a playoff relegation six-pointer. in a sense. I mean, it doesn't matter if the likes of Sheffield Wednesday, Plymouth, Blackburn all win their games respectively, because that means they pull away from the bottom three. But the magnitude of that game, and, you know, both teams dropping points this weekend, just again, it just adds so much to it. And yeah, Birmingham will almost be licking their lips to a certain extent because of how poor Huddersfield are at the moment. They're so poor. They're blunt. They can't score. They rarely create chances. And they looked mentally spent and weak in that game, in the game against Swansea. So yeah, Birmingham will certainly be looking happier going into that one. But yeah, that game now is huge. Probably the biggest game of the weekend next weekend.
Oh yeah, in terms of relegation battle, it definitely is. It's one of the biggest games of the season, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't get much bigger than that in terms of the relegation battle, and we could be saying goodbye to Huddersfield Town if things don't go their way next weekend, which is pretty incredible, really, considering you know, what they've done in the past few years. But here we are. A quick word on Swansea, Justin. They're guaranteed to be with us next season. They've been safe for a few weeks, actually. But how would you review their season? It's been a bit up and down, hasn't it?
Yeah, too right. Yeah, I mean, if you're appointing a manager into Michael Duff, you know, an exciting manager with a style of play that I think could work quite well in the Championship under the right circumstances and the right team, and then you sack him, and you know, he doesn't win any fans over, and he downplays the importance of a South Wales derby, etc. Then you go for Luke Williams, and things don't really pick up, and you know, there's still a lot of blowback towards the ownership, and you know, it's been an up and down season. It's been a season of a roller coaster, but one of a team that is sitting mid-table. I think that's the only way you can describe it. They're an average team with a lackluster ownership with a vision that, you know, no one can really make sense of. So it's been a relatively poor season, but I think Luke Williams, especially since the international break, has given me a lot of optimism for the future.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what direction Swansea are going in, because you are right. The behind the scenes stuff there isn't too promising, and the fans are certainly getting more and more frustrated with the owners. Maybe not as much recently, but they've shown plenty of occasions this season that they aren't too happy with the way the club's being run. But look, I like Luke Williams as a manager. I think he is a Swansea kind of manager, because he plays the Swansea way first and foremost. So I'm excited to see what they do with him in charge. I'm just not sure what to expect of them next season, whether it's just going to be another season like this, another season where they're flirting with relegation, or maybe it's a season where they're in the top half. I honestly don't know right now, but it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in the summer. And the owners need them to have a good summer, because the fans, as we have alluded to, aren't too impressed with how things are going there. In Steve Evans's first game back at Rotherham, they drew 0-0 with Birmingham. Three-word review here from Andy, who's a Blues fan. He says, missing in action. Steve Evans was unveiled to the fans wearing a sombrero, which goes back to the last time he was in charge of Rotherham, when he said he would wear one if he kept them up, or something like that. It's all a bit of fun, I suppose. Well, considering Birmingham battered Coventry last weekend, just six shots against Rotherham and a goalless draw is quite the contrast to that, isn't it? It was just really poor. And there was an enjoyable moment in this game where Birmingham's Jay Stansfield had the ball in the back of net. Complete and utter carnage. The players go off celebrating. The fans are going mad. And just as the players turn around to go back to their own half, Ollie Rathbone for Rotherham walks over to Stansfield and points to the linesman, who's got his flag up for offside. He genuinely had no idea. It was quite funny. But Justin, this is a missed opportunity for Birmingham, isn't it?
Hugely. I mean, I was looking at this result pre-Wednesday win, and I was thinking, is it that bad? I mean, if you look at Rotherham and their season, yeah, okay, dropping points at Rotherham is a frustrating one, because they are the worst team in the Championship and one of the worst teams to have ever set foot in the Championship, this Rotherham team anyway. But in the context of Wednesday winning, yeah, it is a poor result. Your rivals win, your close rivals win, and it's disappointing. Performance-wise, it wasn't as good as obviously the game last weekend either. So, yeah, it's a frustrating one. But if you're looking at positives, they've kept another clean sheet. I think they go into that Huddersfield game next weekend in a much better state, sort of, you know, playing-wise, confidence-wise. Guy Rowett, albeit quite late, seems to have found a rhythm that he needs to find. He's got a reaction after that really poor Cardiff defeat last week as well. But if you're drawing and dropping points to Rotherham, you can only come away being bitterly disappointed, especially with that Wednesday win today.
Yeah, and when you have got that massive game against Huddersfield next weekend, there wouldn't have been as much on the line, would there, if they did get the win here? But now it is absolutely massive. And we talk about how big a game it is from a Huddersfield perspective. If Birmingham lose, they've probably got 1 foot in League One, which is quite a scary thought. I mean, looking at the table now, it's quite a scary sight. But they need to get something from that game, just anything. A loss is a terrible, terrible result. A win, they may very well be planning for next season. It's that kind of game, isn't it, Justin?
Yeah. I was just going to say as well, it's crazy to think that of all their poor squads over the years, the poor running of the club, the points deductions, etc., that this good Birmingham squad, like, let's be really honest, and we've said it very times, it is a good Birmingham squad. It is good enough to be, at the very least, mid-table. This is the closest to relegation they've been since Paul Caddis equalised against Bolton all those years ago. It's mind-blowing. Mm. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And for some reason, quite a lot of sort of spectators and analysers and pundits and whatnot, quite relaxed about Birmingham, and it's, I don't think we should be. I don't think we should be. This is as perilous as they've been for a while.
No, that's a fair point. It's a really fair point, Justin. And I think you're absolutely right that when you think of all the managers and the poor running of the club, the points deductions that they have had, and this is the stage that they're at now where they are looking the most likely to go down. That is a very good point. But also quite scary from a Birmingham perspective as well, because it looked like they had finally got an ownership in who were doing all the right things, and it may lead to them being in League One next season. It's quite mad. But yeah, still plenty to play for in these last two games. And as we say, that game next weekend is so big. So, so, so big. And it'll be one which plenty of teams down at the bottom will be keeping an eye on, including, particularly Plymouth Argyle, really. It's after they lost 3-0 at Stoke in the Stephen Schumacher derby. Three-word review here from Kieran. Stephen Schumacher masterclass. Liam says, smash the pasties. Considering Stoke have struggled in front of goal this season, and they've absolutely battered Plymouth here, could have easily scored more than three. It's quite surprising, really, particularly with these two so close in the table. The brilliantly named Million Manhoff got on the score sheet. Quite close to the million-dollar man, kind of, into Ted DiBiase, which I enjoyed. Young South Korean Bae Jun-ho had a really good game. I was very impressed with him. But, I mean, I was very impressed with all of Stoke, actually, which is not something we've been able to say very often this season, Justin. But you look at it now, they're virtually safe, would you say? Which would be a big relief for those Stokies. Because at various times this season, it looked like they were in serious danger of going down. The Wednesday result is perhaps shaking it up a bit, but considering there's quite a bit of traffic between Stoke and the bottom three, you'd say they're just about safe now.
I would. I'm trying to sort of create a metaphor for it. I'm struggling a little bit. It's one of those where I would be convinced if they were another point or two ahead.
Justin, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. Right? There's so much traffic, and also there's two games left with Birmingham 4 points behind.
It's more so the fact that I think Birmingham. It's more so the fact that how topsy-turvy it's been so far anyway. I mean, who'd have thought Wednesday would pull themselves out of the bottom three? You know, I know they've been in good form, but it's been up against them. You know, the amount of ground they've had to make up, Huddersfield have just dropped like a stone. Birmingham have struggled to get going, and they've just sort of existed in and around that space for a long time. Blackburn were pulling away, and now they're pulled back in again. Similarly with Plymouth after that three-game unbeaten run before the defeat to Stoke. So I would be sat here confident that Stoke and QPR would be staying up. I'd say that if it maybe one or two points ahead of where they are now. I just don't think we've maybe seen the last of some shocks to come over the next two game weeks. I'm holding out for that.
I think that's fair, because this is the Championship and we're very used to shocks at this stage.
I'm trying to advertise.
You are,
craziness.
But I feel like you may be fighting a losing battle, because you would have thought the likes of Stoke and QPR, maybe Blackburn as well, will be fine, because we have only got so many points available in the final two games, and as I say, quite a bit of traffic between these two. So I think we can probably put a big S next to Stoke for safety. But look, it's been a season of turmoil, really, hasn't it? Several players signed with only a handful of successes, and I use successors in quotation marks. a new manager who's certainly had more downs than ups in the short time that he's been in charge so far, and a fan base which is becoming more and more disillusioned with the direction the club is going in. So, while Stoke probably are safe now, My fear is that we are still in the midst of the slide with them. Yes, safety has been secured, and well done to them for pretty much doing that. But this is a club with a lot of problems, and they don't seem to know how to solve them, do we? Steven Schumacher, is he a good enough manager to turn it around? We've seen other managers of similar abilities before also struggle to turn it around. So the jury is well and truly still out there. And then, I mean, they have got John Walters now as the new technical director. So let's see if he can turn the ship around. However, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them in a relegation battle again next season, because that's something we're still quite used to, with Stoke, unfortunately. Well, not a great weekend for Plymouth Argyle. Not only did they lose quite convincingly to a relegation rival, but it was their former manager as well. Oh, dear. On the bright side, Huddersfield lost, Birmingham drew. So they're still 20th, but with Wednesday's win, that means they're now only 2 points clear of the relegation zone. Plymouth have got Millwall and Hull in their remaining games. What do we think, Justin? I mean, there's a chance that they could stay up even by losing both of them.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously you've got Plymouth and Hull. You've got Hull, who have, they boast a lot of good players and still have an outside chance of finishing in the top six. And you've got Millwall, who have won three games straight under Neil Harrison, are a very difficult side to break down. So it's one of those where you just sort of grit your teeth and go, yeah, we're safe, aren't we? We'll do it, boys. Yeah, we've got this. And you're not really convincing in what you're saying. But I think what Neil Doonship has shown over the last few games is they can ride their luck. You know, you look at the Leicester game, Leicester miss a boatload of chances and they came away with a 1-0 win. And then following game, they get absolutely battered by Stoke. So it's just a very championship sort of form, the mindset they go into, where they pull off an absolute shock in one game and then get absolutely panned the next. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go away to a Millwall or a Hull and get a couple of results, because again, they're fighting for their lives, and that changes the complexion of what teams do and how good they are, etc.
Yeah, well, as I say, I wouldn't be surprised if Plymouth lost both those games and still ended up staying up, because that's just how poor the teams down there are. At the same time, they could do with just any form of points from those last two games, just to kind of keep it safe. They are quite fortunate that they've got by far the best goal difference out of all the teams down there, which I think is becoming more and more of a factor as we get towards the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But look, Plymouth have got a bit of momentum. I mean, losing 3-0 away at Stoke is a great way to lose a lot of that momentum. But considering what we have seen from them under the in Dewsnip, that's promising, at least, I would say. So I think Plymouth should be okay, but I don't want to completely say they'll be safe, because there's still so much to play for in these final two games. And, you know, as we say, there's plenty of twists and turns still to have, isn't there, Justin? And the other team we were just talking about, Justin, who are probably just about safe now, is QPR. They beat Preston 1-0. Lyndon Dykes getting the only goal. I was saying in the previous show with SBK on Friday how all of QPR strikers are massively out of form. Well, Preston's goalkeeper, Freddie Woodman, obviously heard that and felt sorry for them, so decided to gift Dykes one of the easiest goals he'll ever score. Lewis, with a three-word review, he's actually renamed QPR to Quality Play Rangers. Look, Justin, we were billing this as a massive game for QPR. A loss here would have left them looking over their shoulder, particularly with Sheffield Wednesday winning. But a win means, like Stoke, they're pretty much safe now, aren't they? So here we are. The Marty party has done it, haven't they? Marty Sifuentes seems to have kept QPR up, and that genuinely is a magnificent achievement, isn't it?
Again, I'm going to sit on the side of the fence that I was with Stoke, because the level on points with Stoke on 50. But if I was to be more convinced by QPR than Stoke about staying up and getting results in the next two games, then I would be, mainly because I'd probably back Marty Sifuentes a little bit more than Steven Schumacher right now. And you know, Sifuentes just deserve a lot of credit, a huge amount of credit. I was looking at the amount of points he's collected since he came into QPR, 42 since he was appointed. So QPR would be 10th in the table based on that, which I think is a remarkable feat, given that, you know, strikers aren't scoring. He's had to change the mindset of the team, change the style of play, etc. So I think it's been an incredible turnaround in form for QPR. But like I was saying about Stoke, not quite safe yet.
Yeah, they have got two very tricky games still to play, but I think they should be okay at this stage, just because, well, Birmingham and Huddersfield are playing each other, so someone's dropping points there. And then, similar with Stoke, a lot of traffic So you're asking for a lot of teams to pick up points, which they haven't been able to do very often this season. So they should be okay. And if that is the case, then Marty Sifuentes has done a blinding job this season. We've said that constantly, haven't we, Justin? Mm-hmm. And it bears repeating because, wow, what a cracking job that is if he does keep them up. Justin, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about the promotion race in the Championship.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast, and it's now time for us to check out how our Second Tier multiple with SBK got on, which included our Game of the Week as well as just a nice two bankers from Friday. We had Birmingham and Southampton to win, and Leicester West Brom to be a draw. Oh, God. We're actually getting worse, aren't we? But we'll be back with another multiple in this coming Friday's preview show with SBK. We've got two preview shows left, Justin. We can get one before the end of the season. I just know it. Anyway, let's go to the top of the Championship where we find Leicester City, who are back there after a 2-1 win over West Brom. Three-word reviews here from Leicester fans. The final whistle says a huge win. Jack says, what a relief. Alex says, never in doubt. Justin, how have Leicester won this?
Never in doubt. I love that. It's sort of misguided confidence and maybe saying it through his teeth a little bit. But yeah, how did they win it? It was a frenetic game, wasn't it? There was a lot of nervousness and tension in the crowd. There are quite a few mistakes from both sides. I mean, Okay, Acosta missing a chance after a couple of minutes was a big one. Chowdhury clearing off the line from Mikey Johnson as well. Yeah, I mean, how did Leicester win it? But you know, in the face of adversity, they've come up trumps, haven't they? They've reversed Leicester themselves. They've been on the other end of these games quite often over the last few weeks, and they go and pull one out of themselves. It's incredible.
Yeah, as far as wins go, I think it's safe to say it was far from convincing, wasn't it? Hamza Chowdhury had to make 3 goal line clearances. West Brom hit the bar as well and nearly scored off the rebound off that as well. They really deserve something from the game, but somehow they didn't. And you know what? Despite all that, I don't think Enzo Maresca will bloody care, because he celebrated that win like he won the World Cup when the full-time whistle went. And I don't blame him, because he had some big calls to make in this game. He brought Connor Cody into the team, only his 7th league start this season. Valt Feist was playing at left back, and he had a big choice to make in terms of who played at front as well, with basically all the strikers being out of form. He went with Jamie Vardy, who eventually paid him back for his faith. And it was a bit nervy at times, with Vardy missing a penalty, which wasn't a penalty, by the way. Mads Hermansson in goal nearly got caught out a couple of times. So there were a few edgy moments. But in the current circumstances and at this stage in the season, it doesn't matter how you win. It's just about getting that bloody win. And on another day, they may not have got it, but they did. And that means an awful lot to their promotion hopes, because they're now top of the league again. 2 points clear of second placed Ipswich, 4 points clear of third place Leeds. 3 games remaining for all of them at the time of recording. And judging from how it is right now, Justin, they simply have to get promoted from this position, haven't they? But we've said that before.
They have to get promoted. Look, they're on 91 points. How often over the past few seasons is that one team's titles? Very, very often. And you're right. I mean, it's just remarkable that the teams are still below them. It's remarkable how often Leicester are throwing it away. So therefore, based on those odds, they could throw it away again. But I'm not going to say this game was a turning point because we need to see what happens in the next game. We've said this before. Obviously, Leicester won back-to-back games and lost back-to-back games because it was a very Leicester thing to do in their current situation. But if you were to take this game as a you know, in isolation, it was a poor performance, but they got the result. And like you were saying earlier, it's that's what matters at this stage of the season. You've got to win by playing poor. You've got to win by playing poor, and that's what good title-winning teams do. So if they can keep doing that over the next three games that they've got, then yes, they will get promoted, they will win the title, they will do it. But how often have we been in a position where it looked like they were pulling away and they were going to get it over the line and they tripped themselves up over their own laces? It's a very Leicester thing to do, and obviously big game against Southampton next as well. So
yeah, incredible. Massive game against Southampton. But yeah, looking at the table now, it would be quite the crumble if they didn't go up from here. By the way, that picture we posted on Twitter a couple of times of the Leicester City badge in some Apple crumble, I've never seen an image rattle a fan base as much as that one does, but it's very, very funny. But look, it looks like there isn't too many more steps that Leicester have to take for promotion now. It is worth remembering, as we were alluding to in Friday's preview show, Justin, that West Brom had their wobble earlier in the season, then went to West Brom and got a win. And this may be the same thing here, where they've had a wobble, they've played West Brom and they've beaten them. And now it looks like Leicester can see the Premier League on the horizon, because they can actually go up this week. If Leeds lose on Monday night and then Leicester beat Southampton on Tuesday, that's it. Alternatively, if Leeds win and then Leicester lose, Leeds will only be a point behind them again. So who knows? It's a massive, massive week in Leicester City and their future, I guess, in general, because yeah, of everything that's going on over the summer, which we have mentioned plenty of times here. But look, they should have never been in this position in the first place, where they were worrying about the teams behind them, but they are. But they're closing in on saving their own blushes. I think that's safe to say, Justin. Let's talk about West Brom. That pass, by the way, Cedric Kipre for the West Brom goal. Oh, my Lord. I'm going to be having dreams about that tonight, and I'm talking about the naughty kind of dreams. Three-word review here from Neil, the Albion fan. Threw it away. That's probably a good way of summing it up, isn't it, really, Justin? Because you can't really criticise them too much here. It's not their fault that Hamza Chowdhury turned into a wall on the goal line. But they remain fifth, and with Hull drawing this weekend, it means West Brom are just about there as far as the playoffs are concerned. Got to be said, though, they're not in the best form, though, are they? One win in six. Is that a problem, do you think, Justin, heading into the playoffs?
It's not great. I mean, you look at last season, Middlesbrough stumbled into the playoffs, didn't they? They were sort of going for the title and then really dropped off, not going for the title, sorry, going for automatics, and then really, really dropped off towards the last sort of two or three game weeks, and they looked really unconvincing in that semi-final against Coventry and eventually lost. So it's the importance of form. It really is the importance of form. I don't know whether there's been sort of a psychological drop-off within games from the players because they've been in that position of fifth for so long of the season. Maybe they just take the foot off the gas a little bit and ease up. I don't think they wouldn't have done it purposely, obviously, but I think maybe that's an accidental thing. And I think what this game will serve as a reminder of is that they need to take their chances, because if they don't do that in the playoffs, they're not gonna get promoted. It's as simple as that. So, yeah, they're in a precarious position because Hull could still catch up both Norwich and West Brom in the top six. It's an outside chance, but you know, West Brom are making a really bad go of making it look convincing of being a playoff team right now.
Yeah, I think we can probably say Hull catching them up is quite a remote chance of that happening, but I take your point. I really appreciate the point you were making just a second ago about Middlesbrough, though, Justin, because I think that's so important to remember. I mean, people always say the playoffs are a lottery, which can be true, but I have had a look at how much form matters heading into the playoffs. I mean, last season it was Luton and Coventry in the final. Luton ended the season unbeaten in 14, while Coventry were unbeaten in 7. And then you mentioned Middlesbrough, of course, who were the third or fourth best team in the division, but because they did falter so much, it cost them, didn't it? Yeah. So, you know, when you're in the playoffs, form is just so key. And just going back onto the point I was just making, Forest and Huddersfield were the year before as well. Huddersfield were unbeaten in 7, while Forest had won 9 in 12. So that kind of just sums up my point, really, doesn't it? So, you know, make of that what you will, but recent history suggests form is a big factor when it comes to the playoffs. And it is strange, really, that West Brom have had a poor run of form, because they haven't really had one all season until now. They've been pretty consistent, haven't they? But are now having this spell. So it's really not ideal. I will say, though, I still wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs because facing a Carlos Corberan side in that kind of environment would be far from ideal. So still a side to fear, even if their form isn't the best. I think we could say that much for sure. Well, Southampton's automatic promotion hopes were alive, but are now probably over again. It's after they lost 2-1 away at Cardiff, a 95th-minute winner from 19-year-old Kean Ashford on his first league start. What a moment for him. Three-word reviews here from Cardiff fans. Sloper Road Blues says promotion-ending blues. Oliver says beat the banker. Chevy's a Southampton fan. She says wasted chances again. Brian says I blame Peachy. From a Southampton perspective, I will point out, I blame Peachy is in reference to Justin picking Southampton as his banker for the weekend.
Completely fair.
Moving on. From a Southampton perspective, this was the complete opposite to what happened to Leicester, wasn't it? How was Southampton not 5-0 up here in the first half? It was absolutely remarkable, Justin.
Yeah, I mean you've got to compliment the football for starters, because you know, to come out of the blocks as quick as they did was great. It's a really good habit to have, but if you don't take those chances, you're going to get bit on the arse. And you know, a 96-minute bite on the arse is a very, very harsh bite on the arse, isn't it? It's not great. It's not great at all. And it's quite remarkable. I think that makes it even more incredible is the fact that they were so devastating against Preston in a 30-minute spell in midweek, almost repeated against Cardiff, but just couldn't find the back of the net. It was ridiculous. And Russell Martin was quite rightly very, very angry post-game. He said it was unacceptable to lose the game based on the amount of chances they had. And you can't disagree with that. It was a big game for Southampton. Biggest game of the season, according to Russell Martin. And they fluffed it. It's as simple as that. It's a really disappointing way to really derail your automatic promotion hopes after putting yourself into the conversation literally a week ago.
Yeah, they were derailed, but then the train magically managed to get off its side and get back on the tracks, and now it's derailed again. And it seems like the thing that's derailed it was Ethan Horvath, who had the game of his life in the Cardiff goal. He may have single-handedly killed off Southampton's automatic promotion hopes. Imagine if we said to a Southampton fan back in August, Ethan Horvath is going to kill off your automatic promotion hopes in April. They'd be like, what on earth are you on about? But that's what's happened. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of net, could they? They had so many golden chances. And when I say golden, I'm talking 24-carat golden chances. Cardiff's defenders seemed to be on the beach on multiple occasions. It was quite outrageous. But look, Southampton had the chance to keep themselves in the automatic promotion race. They can't say that they've not been given enough chances, because Leeds, Leicester, Ipswich have given them as much chance as possible. Cardiff's defenders gave them as much chance as possible. It was Ethan Horvath who didn't get the memo. But look, is that Southampton's top two hopes over then, Justin? If they beat Leicester on Tuesday, they'd still be 4 points behind them with a game in hand. So you'd probably suggest, even if they do win that, they're not going to catch Leicester. They would only be 2 points behind Ipswich, though, who would have a game in hand. So simply put, Southampton have to beat Leicester to make the most of their last two games, and hopes that Ipswich and Leeds keep slipping up. But even as I say that out loud, it pretty much emphasises the point. It's more than likely going to be the playoffs again for Southampton now, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of arithmetic to work out, because obviously they can take points off Leeds and Leicester, which is a nice place to be, but also an uncomfortable one, because they are good sides and the 3 points aren't going to be guaranteed like they would be, say, for against Rotherham. But then
but on that point, Justin, yes, they have got to play Leicester and Leeds, but it's not really Leicester or Leeds they're catching up with now, is it? They're trying to catch up with Ipswich, because they're probably not going to catch Leicester now. So a few weeks ago, it looked like those games were a massive advantage for Southampton. They're actually more of a hindrance now, I think, aren't they?
Well, this is what I mean. It's a very unique scenario for Southampton in that they do play two teams in the top three. But as you say, if they, you know, throwing the game away against Cardiff has really damaged that potential of mounting that pressure on Leicester. I think that would have been a key thing, is that pressure going into that game in midweek. Now Leicester sort of can go into it and go, actually, no, if we draw, we might be all right. You know, we've got a better goal difference in Ipswich, so draw might actually suit us, etc. That might be their mindset. Probably wouldn't be, but you get my point. It just takes that pressure off them and puts it back onto Southampton. Now Southampton need to win against Leicester. They need to win against Leeds. They're in a position where they need to win. And it's obviously caught up with them, because, you know, you do that for too long, then, you can fall on your arse. And unfortunately, Cardiff helped them do that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I think Leicester can now head into that game thinking a point may be enough for us, because then I'm just trying to do some mental arithmetic in my head as we go, but I think they would only need two more points after that. So that's a pretty good position for Leicester to be in at that stage, isn't it? So yeah, it's a really disappointing one for Southampton. That game on Tuesday probably doesn't have as much of a sting in it as it did heading before this weekend, but still a big game. Obviously two massive sides, and it's unfortunate for Southampton, but top two probably over now. A quick mention for after the game: Russell Martin, of course, former Swansea manager, not the most fondly thought of man in Cardiff. He went over to the Southampton fans to clap them, and the ground staff turned on the sprinklers on him, which is wonderful pettiness. He did find it funny, though, so I'm told. So for the second time this season, ladies and gentlemen, Justin Peach made Cardiff to lose as his banker of the weekend, and they won. And that led to Cardiff's Twitter admin once again taking the piss out of Justin Peach. They said, Kean Ashford, he's got a long career ahead of him, and you can bank on that. Of course, making reference to Justin making Cardiff his banker of the weekend. A little winky face in there as well. Justin, how do you feel about being the regular butt of jokes for Cardiff's Twitter admin?
It's fine, as long as I keep giving them material. They need it, obviously, because if they're relying on me to give it to them, they're struggling a little bit, aren't they? A little bit of shade thrown at them there, a little bit of beef. Maybe a boxing match coming up with me and the Twitter admin at Cardiff, I don't know.
Just in your back garden. Yeah. I don't think anyone's paying to watch that.
No, I was watching it, yeah. No, I think the neighbours leave and just go, oh, okay, yeah, these two idiots are scrapping.
What are these guys doing?
Yeah. Just get the hose pipe on us. But yeah, it's fine. I love it. Keep coming. I'm going to keep making Cardiff my, or the opposition to Cardiff my bankers, just to keep up this level of pettiness.
If it makes you feel any better, it clearly shows that we are massive and having some sort of an influence. I'm not sure if it's a good influence, but it's an influence nonetheless. But look, a great result for Cardiff. Their season is over now, but they would have found it very enjoyable getting one over Russell Martin, and they certainly did. It's interesting to see what's going on with the future of manager Errol Bullock there, Justin. His contract expires in the summer, and there's been a lot of talk recently about what's happening there. Why hasn't this been renewed yet? He was speaking about it after the Southampton win. He says, I would like to stay, but it's out of my hands. What do you make of all this, Justin?
He's a very outspoken guy, isn't he? And there might be an element of the board thinking, well, maybe he's just a lot, you know, too much hassle than it's worth, because they've employed a lot of yes people over the years, haven't they? Steve Morrison, to an extent Neil Harris, Mark Hudson, you know, a lot of yes people have come in, and they've got Errol Bullock here who will speak his mind. He will speak against the ownership, he'll speak against the board, he'll be frustrated at transfer business. You know, he says what he wants, which isn't a bad thing. I think it throws maybe a little bit more you know, heat from Cardiff fans, but you've got someone on the inside basically telling it how it is. I think it's a refreshing thing, but whether that's enough to for the Cardiff board to renew his contract, it might not be. I think they should, because he's delivered their best, most convincing season since Neil Harris took them to the playoffs, and that was a long time ago now. So yeah, it's an interesting situation, and one that I don't think will be resolved for a few weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting that it keeps rumbling on, but look at it this way. There's no two ways about it. He's done a remarkable job. Cardiff were a club going in completely the wrong direction before he came in, and now they seem to have some sort of sense of what they're doing. I mean, they've got an owner whose interest in the club changes like the winds, a squad with varying degrees of talents, and they were a bit of a mess before Bullock came in, and that's one of the reasons why I was talking up the possibility of Cardiff going down before the season started, because it was a big job he had to do. And I will admit, when he came in, I was sceptical. He was a bit of an unknown, and that often goes one of two ways in the Championship. Luckily, it's gone the right way, because he's done superbly. The football isn't great, admittedly, and they have been a bit fortunate on multiple occasions this season. However, for them to be sat 11th in the table right now is bloody good going. So they have to offer him a new deal. I think it's a bit mad, actually, that they haven't. But this is Cardiff City. They do have a record of making strange decisions. Look at Sabri Lamouchi last season. So hopefully they see sense and reward him for his success this season. Whether that actually happens or not, I'm not too sure. Well, Justin, let's round off with the promotion race, because we've been discussing it at length here, and Ipswich and Leeds, of course, didn't play this weekend. Ipswich, because they were meant to play Coventry, who, of course, had the FA Cup semi-final this weekend. Leeds are away at Middlesbrough on Monday night. Leeds have to win this, don't they, Justin? They simply have to win this.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, they've got to get 3 points, and it's a tough game against Middlesbrough because they're unbeaten in six, drawn for quite a few games in that time, but they've become a difficult side to play against again because they go in these periods of form that they go in. As I say, that the amount of pressure that's going to be on Leeds to get 3 points is going to be monumental, especially with Southampton breathing down their neck, with Ipswich having a game in hand on them, and obviously Leicester winning as well. It's a huge, huge game, and over the last few weeks, Leeds have been really unconvincing. They've not really risen to the occasion, and it's going to be an occasion where they have to. And it's another game on TV. It's another night game. It's going to be another game where all eyes are on Leeds, waiting for them to fall apart again, which adds a lot of pressure.
Yeah, well, the pressure is massively stacked on Leeds, isn't it? Because they haven't been playing very well recently, and it's getting to the point now where they have to turn it around. Otherwise, they're not going up automatically. Put it this way: if Leeds were to lose here, there would be limbs in Leicestershire and Suffolk, because Leicester would just need one more win. Ipswich would just need 5 more points, I think. It's that time of the year where I'm doing all the maths and it's quite confusing, but I'm pretty sure that's all Ipswich would need at that stage. So really, even a draw's not great for Leeds, considering Ipswich have that game in hand. So yeah, no two ways about it, really. This is a season-defining game for Leeds United, and they've got to make the most of it. Otherwise, it's you're basically putting it straight into the hands of Leicester and Ipswich, who will massively thank you for that. Justin, let's do the poll, shall we? This is the part of the show where we give the listeners 3 questions on Twitter, because we want to get their thoughts on everything to do with the championship. So the first question we asked was this: if these teams were in the playoffs in May, who would you fancy to win them? Leeds, Southampton, West Brom, Norwich. Who would you say, Justin?
Well, I would have said West Brom. I really would have said West Brom. But did they stumble over the last couple of weeks to change my mind? Maybe. I might edge towards Leeds, just because I think they've still got another gear in them that we're not seeing yet. And once they get into that gear, they're a really difficult side to stop.
Yeah. Well, Leeds are the strongest team in there, aren't they? I don't think you can really debate that, because they simply are. And from what we've seen of them this season, they've done enough to earn automatic promotion in most normal seasons, but because this isn't a normal season, they may not get there, but only time will tell in that case. So I'd say Leeds out of those three, however, out of those four, rather. However, what we were talking about earlier, Justin, with the form and how much that matters going into the playoffs, none of them are really in form, really, no, apart from Norwich. So I don't really know. I'm not heading into this with much particular confidence when it comes to the playoffs. But it'd be interesting to see who does end up in there. Going back to the poll results, 39% of people said Leeds, 28% said Southampton, 23% said West Brom. It's quite a lot for West Brom, isn't it? Only 10% said Norwich. Poor Norwich. Justin, how do you think Sheffield United will do in the Championship next season? Top two, top six, top half, bottom half? That's the next question we've put to the listeners.
I think when they came down and employed Slivica Jokanović, I said they're guaranteed to finish 17th. And they probably would have. I would say they'd be guaranteed to finish 17th next season because of the changeover, turnover and squad that they're going to go through. So I'm going to say bottom half.
Why 17th? That's just
it's very specific. It's just, I don't know. 17th is just very low and mid-table, isn't it? You're not quite in a relegation battle, but you're not any good. You're not mid-table.
Okay. 17th. There we go. Yeah. Justin has had his say. Strangely specific. I find it quite difficult to get very encouraged about Sheffield United, as we were alluding to not too long ago. It's going to be fascinating to see what actually happens with them in the summer. So it's very early to make a solid prediction, let alone 17th in the table. At this stage, I would be very surprised if they finished in the top two. Top six, maybe. I think top half is probably the more likely as things stand, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And the listeners agree with me. 48% said top half, 33% said top six, 14% said bottom half, 5% said top two. And a final question we put to the listeners is this: is CrossFit cool, yes or no?
It absolutely is cool because I do it. I've got muscles.
Does that make it cool?
Yeah, I've got muscles. And I've got friends. I've got friends from the gym.
What about if it's your only personality trait?
I have a podcast as well, remember? So I have two personality traits.
If I could just let the listener look behind the curtain for a sec. Me and Justin were at a wedding yesterday and I was chatting to him, but then I briefly went away to chat to someone else. When I came back, he was talking about CrossFit.
No. I got asked a question. I got asked a question and I answered it. I wasn't going to be rude because I'm not that guy, okay? But look, if my personality trait is CrossFit, then that's fine. All yours is horse racing. So get a life and Marvel.
Hey, I'll take it. So you're saying CrossFit is cool?
CrossFit is absolutely cool.
87% of our listeners said, no, it's not.
Absolute dicks.
13% said it is. Now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon, Grace and Edge.
Oh, baby, it's time for Simon, Grace and Sateful Eight. So Justin is going to ask me to name eight of a certain subject. All I've got to do is name all eight. So, for example, if he would say, name Steve Bruce's last eight clubs, and I would say Villa, that's one down, Newcastle, that's another down. But if I were then to say Weymouth, I would lose a life. So all I need to do is give all eight answers without losing all of my lives. And you can get involved in the fun by sending in your hateful eights for either Justin or I to answer. Send them into secondtierpod@gmail.com. And you could get a shout out the next time we do a hateful eight. Who is this hateful eight from, Justin?
This one's from Tom Nichols. And oh, he sent in a doozy. He sent in a doozy. So since the championship was rebranded in 2004, eight current clubs in the championship have played European football in some capacity. So can you name all eight? I did notice there are actually nine when I did my background research. But if you name eight, fucking hell, you've done a good job. Okay. You've done a good job.
So there's eight teams in the championship right now who have played European football since 2004?
Yes.
Fuck me.
Okay. They've played football in Europe in some capacity. Not the Intertoto Cup. Yeah. I'm not counting
that. Fine. How many lives are you giving me?
I'm going to give you three. This is difficult.
This does sound difficult. Okay. Well, Leicester City.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say your odds are enhanced because there are obviously nine teams who have done it, but I don't think you'll get the ninth team.
Okay. Leicester City.
Leicester City are correct. They've played in the Champions League and several other European campaigns under Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah. So my tactic here is trying to remember who has won the cups, because that makes sense, doesn't it? Because you win a cup, you win European competition. So with that being said, I'll go Swansea City.
Yes, Swansea City are correct. They were in the Europa League or UEFA Cup, I can't remember when it changed, in 2013-14 after winning the League Cup the previous year.
Cool. I am going to next say Middlesbrough. I'm not sure if that was 2004 though.
Nope, you are correct. They did win a League Cup in 2004, but they had two UEFA Cup campaigns in 06 and 07, 06, 07 and 07, 08. Obviously got to the UEFA Cup final where they lost to Rangers, was it? It wasn't Rangers, was it?
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Was it Rangers? I can't remember.
Strange to think that Middlesbrough were like a top-half Premier League side quite regularly.
Yeah, under Stevie Mack, yeah, incredible. That got in the England job and the rest was history.
Speaking of teams who were once upon a time a top half Premier League side, I'm going to say Blackburn Rovers.
You'd be correct. Two UEFA Cup campaigns in 06 07 and 07 08, similar to Middlesbrough.
Now, this is getting a bit tricky.
Why are you reaching for your laptop?
I'm just looking at the table.
Get back.
Have a look at the table. I can look at the table, Connor. Hull must be in there because they won a trophy at one point.
They didn't win a trophy. You are correct in Hull, but they got to the FA Cup final and had Europa League qualifiers in the 14-15 season.
Yes.
Didn't get through to the group stage though. But you are correct, albeit you were wrong.
How many more have I got?
You've got three more.
Did Stoke play in the Europa League? I think they must have done.
They did play in the Europa League. Yeah. They got to the FA Cup final, lost to Man City, and played in the Europa League in 2011-2012, where they lost to Valencia.
There's one or two left.
There's two.
God, this is stressing me. I'm just looking at the table. No one's standing out to me anymore.
There's one you should get.
Is there?
Yeah, absolutely. This one's a tap-in.
Oh, Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Birmingham. Yeah, Birmingham are right. 11-12 group stages. Did a really good job in the group stages. Narrowly missed out. Narrowly missed out. But yeah, they went through. There's one left. You've got two. There are two options here that you can go for. And I don't think you'll get either.
How many lives have I got left again?
You've actually got 3 lives left.
Right, I'm going to throw one out there because I know they did very well around 2004, but I'm not sure if they cross over into the Championship era. So I'm going to say Ipswich Town.
Incorrect. They were a Championship team in 04-05, unfortunately, and 03-04.
They were, weren't they? I was just thinking because they got top. They finished fourth.
They finished fourth or fifth in the 2000-2001 season. Did play European football, but that's not since the Championship was rebranded.
Just because they were very good for a period around 10 years ago, I'm going to throw Southampton at you. They're the only other team who are standing out to me here.
You'd be correct. You've done it. You've beaten Simon Grayson. The 16-17 season.
Can I name the other team as well, please?
You can. You can.
Did Watford do it?
No.
No. Who the hell is the other team? Standing out to me.
The other team completely passed me by.
Hang on. QPR?
Incorrect.
Who is it then?
It's Millwall.
Oh, because they got to the... Yes, of course.
Yes, the first season the Championship was rebranded in 04-05. They played UEFA Cup qualifiers.
Yeah.
Lost. And because they got to the FA Cup final the previous year where they beat them by Man United.
No, that's a very good answer, that. Because I was just going through them all. I was like, well, I'm going to have to pick Premier League teams here. I didn't even consider Millwall. So that's a very good shout. But there we go, ladies and gentlemen. I've beaten Simon Grayson Tate for Late. And that means we're set for a good week ahead, ladies and gentlemen. And this has been the Second Tier Podcast. We'll be back again on Thursday to go through the 2 games we've got coming up over the next couple of days in the Championship. So we bloody look forward to seeing you then. We'll also talk about any news that happens over the coming days. So why don't you join us on Thursday? This has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.